What a fang banger.
Hello and welcome to Fang Bangers Podcast. We are chaotic corny friends rewatching the chaotic corny HBO series True Blood. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Tasia. And this week we are discussing season 3, episode 5, Trouble. This episode originally aired on July 18th, 2010. It was written by Alan Ball himself and directed by David Petrarca. We're going to go with that.
The summary from Wiki for this episode. Yeah, that is exactly how I thought it would sound when I saw it. The summary from Wiki, Alcide and Sookie turn to an alpha wolf pack master. I love that that's in quotes. For advice on dealing with Russell's minions, Tara considers a proposal from Franklin, who's completed his mission for Russell. Jolie breaks his promise to Sam and Tommy. Lafayette learns the meaning of patience from Jesus, his mother's orderly. Jason meets his match in the mysterious girl Crystal. And Heirloom reminds Eric of his past and ongoing thirst for vengeance.
I love the packmaster in quotes because it feels very like that's what you're going to call yourself, you douchebag.
Yeah, that's just that's editorializing. This man is not shit. This episode is wildly fun. There is so much happening, so many plots. It was hard to wrangle the notes, actually. I found it a little difficult.
Yeah. I'm like looking through my notes now too, and I do have a lot more notes than I normally do, I think, for this one. So that's fun. We got lots to talk about.
Every moment is either funny or legitimately significant mm-hmm. in this episode. So it just is a really fun time. Also, you pointed out that Alan Ball wrote this episode. He also wrote the next episode. Spoilers for that, but we possibly will mention that this episode and the next episode feel somewhat like a two-parter or like one episode they just decided where to chop.
Yeah.
So I've got these notes together somewhat in order of appearance, little couplings and groupings, but also sort of by location because we've got a lot of people in Jackson and then the rest of our friends in Bontom. So I think we will get started with Tara and Franklin.
Yeah.
Because Franklin brought Tara to Russell's house where Bill is. And so Tara and we would maybe think that this would be good news for Tara, but she's like really surprised to see him. And she's even more surprised when he pretends like they're not friends. Like he was not dating her best friend for the past however many months. Like he basically tells his friends right to her face, like that she's not shit.
Yeah. I hate that because like and like not to get too far into like the rest of the episode or whatever, but like what he's doing is ostensibly to protect Sookie, like pretending to be on their side, you know, shifting alliances, whatever. But it doesn't matter because they're going after Sookie anyway. Like Sookie is their target. Bill mm-hmm. is not their target. Sophie Ann isn't even really their target. Sookie is their target. So everything that he's doing is absolutely pointless. And so he's sitting here being like, well, fuck you, Tara. Like, I don't care. Because he doesn't want to get involved in, like, the Sookie stuff or attract them to the Sookie thing. But it's like, that ship has sailed. You could do something for her, but you're fucking stupid. Yes. So.
And we don't even see enough of Bill in this episode to know if in the back of his mind he was thinking about helping Tara. Yeah. Like, it's one thing for him to be, like, telling his friends that she doesn't mean anything to him and all that. But it's, you know, if Bill knows what's good for him, if he and maybe he doesn't. He tells Sookie, spoilers, at the end of this episode, there's like no hope. Like, it's over. Everything mm-hmm. for me is over. So I guess if he really doesn't have hope, maybe this is just, you know, a non-issue for him. But if he thinks that he's going to be back with Sookie and he lets something happen to Tara here, I mean.
Right, exactly. And even if it isn't like a non-issue that there's no hope for him, like, is this you just showing your real colors then? Since there's no hope for you, you have to make yes. it so there's no hope for anybody else. Like, you're just back to being a douchebag. Yeah. Okay. Like, I guess
it's a pretty bad look for Bill this
entire
episode.
It's not a good look for our guy, Bill.
It's a great look for Talbot, who knows definitely that Franklin is not a person that we should be fucking with and is shocked and appalled that Russell is working with him. And he is the most terrifying, like, man archetype And he would be even if he wasn't a vampire. So the mm-hmm. point that he is a vampire just makes him like exponentially.
Yeah. It's almost scary. Overkill. Like it really is almost overkill. Yeah, because like he is so unhinged. Like, and you can see Tara sitting there trying to like say, uh-huh. like figure out the right thing to say to like talk him off of his ledge or whatever. And just like that's that in itself. Like, I don't know if you've ever been in like an abusive relationship or like have had abusive parents, like you understand what it's like to try to like
narcissistic partner.
Yeah, to have to sit there and constantly try to be like, okay, what do I need to say to like make this stop? And you just see those wheels in her head churning, and it is so upsetting.
Yeah, and it gets even worse. Well, because, and he's like, watch how fast I can spell motherfucker. Like, the way mm-hmm. he just flips from, like, literally abusing her to just, like, silliness is, like, this is not a well person. This yeah. goes beyond, you know, it's narcissistic abuse, it's abuse, period. It's, you know, all that. And also, he can flip this switch like crazy. It's just like so alarming to me. Mm-hmm. And it gets worse because Tara eventually sneaks out and gets caught by, I think it's Cooter. I mean,
yeah,
we only have two named werewolves right now, and it's Cooter and Alcide. So, mm-hmm.
And Debbie.
And and Debbie, yeah. And Franklin's like crying and being like, it feels like I've been stabbed. Like, he just is just the most terrifying flavor. But yeah. she finally catches on to what is going to be able to give her some semblance of control over this person, and starts to like change her behavior and crafting a plan, which hopefully will resolve by tomorrow night, because he wants to make her his vampire bride.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like where this is going.
Terrifying. Yeah, it's not. It's bad. And even Russell knows, because there's this one little scene that I don't have more notes on, which is just Russell turning in his bill pamphlet, or Franklin turning in his bill pamphlet to Russell. And they have a little chat about Tara. And Russell's like, Franklin, you're a huge freak.
It is such a good delivery. Like, Russell, God, who is the actor that plays him again? What's his name?
I don't remember.
Dennis O'Hare, thank you. So he is just fucking fantastic. Like every line delivery, yes. every, so good. He is, and you know he's just having the most fun.
In this episode especially. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have more of his lines and quotes in these notes.
I even have, like, not to spoil our, like, you know, cliffhanger or whatever. Like, I feel like the cliffhanger itself is mid, but like Russell in the cliffhanger just like cackling is great, and I love it.
I can't separate them. But yeah, and this is Franklin also tells Russell that Sookie's in Jackson, so the gig is up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Bill, what are you doing? Why do you have a dossier on your nice human girlfriend, Bill? And Bill is in this meeting with Russell like, who, me?
He is so bad. That. He is not pulling this act off well at all. Like, he is so obvious.
Russell's like, we found it in your house, man. Like, it's over. And Russell's hypothesizing that Bill is investigating Sookie's, like, how telepathy manifests, like, in her whole lineage. For some yet unknown payoff. It's a pretty specific hypothesis, but it seems right.
Yeah.
Cooter just pops in to taunt Bill about Sookie and Alcide. And so Bill beats Cooter's ass, which is great.
Well deserved.
And also this run-in helps Bill escape, because he's back in his Silver Door prison quarters after Russell, you know, lets him know that he knows what's what.
Mm-hmm.
Bill decides to escape captivity and run after Sookie, despite telling Eric, she no longer is mine. She no longer belongs to me. Derp, derp, derp. So he's just, now the whole plan, whatever his plan was, it's fucked.
Yeah. Like, everything he's done is pointless. He could have just, whatever.
He doesn't even get Tara on the way out.
I know. I know. Really, you fucking ass. You're going to Sookie. Why wouldn't you? Oh, whatever. And I did like, though, that moment, with Bill and Lorena, where he's like, you tiresome cow, and I need to adopt that into my own personal insult bag.
I never like say it, but I should start, which is one of my favorite insults, which is from Ever After, when she's like, I would rather see my mother's dress on a whatever than a spoiled selfish cow.
Yeah.
Great. Lorena just is in this episode to remain upset. It's fine.
Yeah. Good stuff. Talbot.
Eric.
Yes. Talbot is simping so hard and same bitch, like one of us.
He loves Eric. He loves Eric. He is in the fan club for sure. And Eric is also at Russell's. I just loved how everybody's just popping up in this house and nobody knows that anybody else is there. And Talbot helps get Eric in because I think he likes the look of him. So I think that's fun, which Eric like makes eyes at Talbot and he's like, yes, I will call Russell for you immediately.
Exactly. And Eric knows exactly what he's doing. Like he sees that gleam in Talbot's eye and he's like, I can work with this.
100%. He wants to ask Russell for permission to hunt Bill on Russell's lands because he's a fugitive Area 5, except he's not because he renounced Sophie Ann. So now he works for Russell. Eric doesn't care. He's like, all right, great. What can I do for you? Because I need to get Pam back. Yeah. Bill who? That was just leverage. Like, let's make a deal now. It's like we don't see... Honestly, like, we could evaluate at the end of this episode what Eric's priorities are going to be, but I like that even though we don't see Pam, like, I'm glad we don't get a flashback to whatever's happening to her at the hands of the Magister, but the episode reminds us that she's in danger, and it's very vital that Eric figure out what to do.
Yeah, he's on a very short timeline here.
Yeah, yeah. Talbot saves Eric from having to hang out with Lorena because she's like, oh, you to Eric. And Talbot's like, boys only.
Yeah, that was so good.
You cannot hang out with us.
That was so good. I want Talbot to be like my best friend. Just be catty and mean to everybody but us.
Yes. Yes. And like, he obviously can keep a tight schedule and he is great at a vibe check of a person. Yeah. So he would just be very good to have around. Yeah, Russell's, like, instruction to Eric is to indulge Talbot. And I'm like, I wonder what that means between the two of them.
What are the parameters there, right?
Talbot has here. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
Because they proceed to flirt with each other. They look at Japanese vampire erotica from the 16th century, which I, for one, would also like to see.
Invite a bitch to this party is all we're saying.
Yeah, what are you doing? And they talk about how there's nothing new except someone new.
Mm-hmm.
Flirting.
So good.
Capital letters, flirting. The vibe gets immediately killed because Eric sees this crown in Russell's collection, which sparks him having a flashback where his human family... Which it's like, how old do you think Eric was supposed to be? Because they portray him like he's like in his young 20s and he's just like still messing around with girls instead of taking things seriously. Mm-hmm. He's not learning how to be. He like leaves this fight with his dad about how his dad's like thinks he's not serious enough to literally go like have sex with the girl again in the hallway, like right off the kitchen. And he looks like a grown ass man. Like,
oh, to be a maid in the Northman house is all I'm going to say about that. So we finally figure out what Eric's beef is with the werewolves and with Russell, the branded werewolves in particular. Because we find out that they killed his entire family.
Yes. So. It's horrible. There's a slain infant baby.
It's
horrible.
Yeah. On screen baby death.
It's like, I guess kudos to you, True Blood, because that's like tough stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly for sure because we're not like completely through the book. This book or the future books or whatever, but like I'm pretty sure that none of this is in the actual Sookie Stackhouse novels, so all of this is adaptation, which is just so good TV, man.
Yeah, I don't remember any of this storyline from the books either, so interesting stuff. And it gives Eric a good kind of sympathetic background because he can, and I think in the books he does kind of like easily come off as cold and austere and just kind of untouchable and untouchably cool. And this gives him, I think, humanity. And that's what he is lacking in the books. Even though I still absolutely love him, he's my favorite in the books as well. But this gives him a humanity, some, you know, rounding of the edges there that I really like.
we've talked before about how he seems like closer to his like human feelings than some of the other vampires mm-hmm. are. So it makes sense that he has like a large trauma in his life. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah. That even
in his human life, yeah. I should say, that like keeps him closer to like those parts of himself.
And I mean, it's impressive that even 1,000 years couldn't, it wasn't enough space to like, you know, rob him of that humanity.
The man is full of love.
Mm-hmm.
this in the flashback, it's a hooded man that collects the crown from the wolf, and it's Eric's flashback. So it's communicated that until this moment, he didn't know who this character was. But mm-hmm. then in the flashback, the hooded person has Russell's voice. And I just was struck by what a fun, just TV stuff this is.
Yeah. And I didn't just remember like
this moment.
I remembered like Godric being 2,000 years old. I remember Eric being 1,000 years old, but I didn't remember. Like, I was running on the assumption that Russell was younger than Eric, because I assume every vampire is younger than Eric, mm-hmm. Other mm-hmm. than Godric, obviously. So this was a mm-hmm. surprise to me, too. I didn't remember this, that Russell is actually older and therefore more powerful than Eric, even. So,
yeah, and he's been communing with werewolves for longer than Eric's been a vampire. So this whole conspiracy goes so deep, so much deeper than yeah. we could have imagined. Speaking of werewolves, speaking of being in Jackson also, Sookie and Elsie are still hanging out. mm-hmm. And she does another line reading that I love, which she's like, I am not going to die because of your shitty girlfriend in a Mississippi pothole.
That was a really good
and
delivery.
She's like, still made up like her uh-huh. you know, alter wear persona. So that's a fun moment. And then she gets woken up. She's staying at Alcide's house. She's woken up by Debbie and Alcide screaming at each other. And mm-hmm. it is like, if I'm not dating, well, for one, don't yell at me. But for two, if you just were branded into a weird, like, sub-vampire, like, Nazi cult, maybe don't come into my house and scream at me. I don't know. Alcide is putting up with way too much from this girl. But Sookie isn't, because she tells Debbie off immediately and is, like, reading the list of names
yeah.
that Debbie is thinking about having slept in the apartment.
Yeah,
it's just like Sookie can be a real savage and I love it. But Debbie is like, fuck you. And she says, like, I will cut you, which seems so 2010 to me. Like, I cannot remember the last time I heard somebody say that or thought about saying it. And yet when I hear it, it feels so correct.
Also, like, what a funny thing to come from a werewolf, too. Like, of all the things. But yeah, this is what one thing that I really love about Sookie is that she just literally does not give a fuck if you're 1,000-year-old vampire or if you're a vicious werewolf that's high on V. She will just go up to your face and talk all the shit and just zero regard for her own life, I guess.
Truly. And it's like, it's worked out so far. So she just yeah. keeps going. And
yeah, why not?
I respect it. Alcide is getting used to it because he tries not to tell Sookie about the quote-unquote Packmaster. Mm-hmm. And he then also, when he fails at that, he tries not to take Sookie with him to see the Packmaster. And she's like, just work with me, Alcide. It gets easier.
It's easier.
She's like, no, I'm just like this. Like, I will yeah. get. She says something else, too. Like, I got to do what I got to do. Like, sorry. Also, I don't think the show has specifically pointed it out, but I mean, I think it's fair to I mean, they have, not specifically with Alcide and Sookie, but with Sam and Sookie, she couldn't read Sam's mind as well. So like if Alcide doesn't want her to know things, she wouldn't know them, but he is going to have to like try a little bit. So like, this is actually on you, sir. You are the only one who even really knows she can read minds. And yet you're just thinking like loudly.
And this is a really good point, and I think it actually is very in line with his character. Like, you look at that man's face, and do you think he is, like, ever bothering to not scream his thoughts inside of his head at all times? Like, I just look at it, and he's just, like, loudly narrating to himself everything that's going on. And that's what he's doing when he, like, walks up to the room where Sookie is, and he's like, I'm gonna go see the Packmaster, la 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 la. And he's just, like, fully narrating his every single thought. Like, sir, a little bit of something, you know, restraint in some way.
I mean, This is a thought that stemmed from me reading the book, because in the book, when they get into one of these little altercations at the bar, in some other instance. Anyway, Alcee thinks something at Sookie, and she's like, oh my God, like, we can communicate this way. And I'm just like, this is, like, who you should date, Sookie. Mm-hmm. Someone who you can enjoy your abilities with, and who also could not scream their thoughts at you all the time. I mean, he would have to practice, as we've discussed. I don't know. I just, like, this is... I'm doing a little ship. I'm raising a little flag on my tiny little boat.
And you know what? I'm not sure if this is fully intentional by the show, because I mean, I know the show wants you to like feel that chemistry, and we definitely do. But I don't know if the show is really pushing them as like a more appropriate pairing. Right. But that's what it feels like to me, and obviously to you as well. All the show is doing right now is showing you how good Sookie and Alcee could be together, and how much more of an appropriate relationship that is for both of them. So I'm like, what is your aim here?
He's an outdoorsy flannel guy. She's like a sun like girl. You know, it's just it would be
They just seem more compatible on every level. So
I mean, we'll see what happens after Sookie recovers from what happens next to her, which is that. It's not exactly next. I just thought that would be funny because they also have to go to the Packmaster. And the reason he's in quotes is because he's scared shitless, and he's like, do nothing. We're fucked. And Alcee is like, that's terrible. And then he tells Sookie that he trusts her kind of like over the Packmaster. And I think it's really nice. And Alcide's really hot. I mean, I know
it's hard to not. I'm just saying, if you're putting like the men in this show in a lineup, I'm not picking Bill first or second or third. Alcide is going to be in the top three, though. So,
yeah, definitely. So the bad part is that Bill shows up, and it's not amazing because he's like, "There's no hope. You're leaving." And Sookie is doing, "If I'm leaving, you're leaving with me." And he's like, "No, no. It's over. It's over for me. Goodbye."
And also feels so dramatic, Bill being like, there's no hope for me. Oh my like, God. Shut up. Just like, shut up forever.
You shouldn't have gotten yourself snatched in the first place, man. Like, you could have been just somewhere where there were witnesses.
Just embarrassing yourself.
They brought Cooter to corral Sookie, but it's so funny because Russell has to, like, remind him. Like, you guys came over here to do a kidnapping, like, if you guys can't get this done, we'll do it ourselves. And then the person you take to do it forgets it's their job when they get in the door. So Cooter's like, I'm taking you. And I love how Sookie is like, she doesn't really know how to use her powers, but she's like, maybe not. And then she's right, because her hand powers pop out and it's incredible. And Russell fucking loves it.
Yeah. Just the pure glee. Like,
I know.
It's He's like a like child.
Unhinged. Uh-huh. Fantastic. And that's the cliffhanger.
He is camp. He is absolutely camp.
He is. And that's like a whole episode of a show, but not that.
Except it's not. We still have more.
We have more and more. I have titled this next section the Bon-Ton Police Department Jason Edition. And they are having a normal one until Jason decides to show up for work that they didn't even know that his job existed here. And it also doesn't. Andy is making it up as he goes along.
Yeah, and I don't know why Andy isn't making him do, like, instead of giving him just, like, busy work, why don't you give him, like, make him take that test? If you're making him do work he doesn't want to do anyway, but letting him be there like he's a cop, make him do cop things, like make him work towards taking that test, you know, give him a study buddy. Like, I don't know, like do something. He's doing nothing.
Yeah, it's like it's incredible just lack of just any amount of foresight or intelligence on Andy Belford's part to think that he could just sit Jason in a desk. This is the most names I've ever confused in one evening. But that he could just sit Jason in a desk and it would go fine. Like, Jason is not made for a desk job.
It's no, he's a child.
Going extremely badly. And
he's a child in a restaurant that, like, doesn't want to be there and just crawling all over the booth, you know, and, like, hiding under the table, trying to walk up to – he's that child. And
yes, yes.
I did really love Kenya, though, and her her like smug satisfaction when she goes, file that for me, will you, babe? You know that she's been – you know that that gave her so much satisfaction she needed a cigarette afterwards. I'm just saying.
Oh, my God. Totally. Jason's like, Andy, I'm going to lose it. So he gets to go take his shirt off and clean the police cruisers. But he catches the eye of a cute girl. And so he decides to steal. I'm going to use the word steal. A police cruiser to go chase after a girl. And there's like a banjo song.
Okay, so I think, and I know this is like played for jokes and it's like silly or whatever, but Jason is already like, I mean, this is just more proof that he should never be a cop, is that he's already abusing what little power he has in order to pull over a woman he's attracted to. And I just don't think that holds up, because we know what cops are doing out there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, this is a thing that happens with like much worse consequences. And it just, I don't know, it feels gross knowing how many women are actually abused in exactly this way. And to see it like played for jokes, like it's funny. It's funny in the moment because it's Jason and because this is such a Jason thing to do. But it is, I don't know, it just made me think about like the real life kind of situation there. And I did not feel good about it.
Yeah, in the cold light of 2024, this is not, a lot of what's going on with Jason and the police is not holding.
Oh, yeah, none of it has been good since the last episode of the last season. It has been very bad, not holding up at all.
It's, like, fun and cute, this banter he has with this girl. Like, they have good chemistry, and, like, she knows Jason's full of shit and is like, well, since you're a fake cop, I'm leaving, which is great. And he wants her to meet him, and it's fine. So there, he's at Merlot's, like, waiting for her, and he finds out that Andy is all excited because he got all of the requirements to be a police officer waived except for the physical fitness test and the written exam. And Jason is mad because he is too dumb to take the written exam. And I'm like, how can you possibly be mad? Like, you're just an idiot.
And like Andy says, like, literally just memorize a few things and forget it the next day. Like, that's literally all he has to do, which is troubling. But, like, that's literally all he has to do. But he's not willing to put in any work for it. And I think Andy and or probably both Sookie have had this conversation with Jason before, where everything, his entire life has come so easily to him, football, his jobs afterwards, everything, girls, that he does not know what it's like to have to work for anything. Like, we saw him at the Fellowship of the Sun or whatever camp, that he just excelled. He was immediately teacher's pet. He was immediately pulled under everybody's wing, and everybody else was jealous of that. We just see that continue. He doesn't know how to work for anything. So for him, the concept of like, oh, I have to actually study for 5 minutes to take this test, like, it's unacceptable to him. And like, that level of entitlement is just like, man, like, sit down and shut the fuck up and just do what you need to do. Like, you are such a little bitch, honestly.
What's crazy about all of this, which what you're saying, which is 1000% correct and accurate, in this episode Jason stomps off because he's mad that he might have to really take this test to get what he wants, and he runs into the girl who he was going to miss if he wouldn't have been throwing a fit.
Still gets what he wants.
Charmed life. She was too nervous to go into Merlot's. He's like, take a walk with me. So they go make out by the lake, which is apparently what a nature walk is. This reminds me of when I was like in high school, I dated a boy who was too old for me, and I asked my mom if I could go stargazing with him, and she laughed in my face about it for the next literally 4 years.
Oh my God. Iconic. I need to shake that honest, woman's hand.
To be honest, I get it. Like, I bet you if the word stargazing was brought up, she would still be like, Melissa, remember when you asked me if you could go stargazing with a 17-year-old boy when you were 14?
Oh my God.
I totally get it now. But at the time, I was like, okay, you don't have to make this much fun of me, all right? Like,
No, she was right. She was right.
She was too. Yeah. So, but Jason and Crystal are both consenting adults, so it's okay. And they're talking about how, like, she's an outdoor girl and, like, they have that in common. Honestly, it's, like, pretty sweet because at least for this one moment in time, Jason has a real connection with her and he, like, really sees at least that one part of her, like, pretty clearly. And I think that's nice, although he takes it too far. I guess that's technically a spoiler for the next episode, but it does get taken too far. Yeah, and then we just have, like, the rest of the people that hang out at Merlot's and live in Bontom. Sam's family continues to be awful, and it's horrible and awkward for all of us involved. And they live right next to Arlene, so all of these things get to, like, happen together, which is, I guess, one good reason for Sam to be a landlord. But Terry's moving in with Arlene, and he's so happy.
And I do feel like Sam uses his, like, landlord powers for good over evil most of the time.
He does.
But yeah, oh my God, that speech that Terry gave Sam about how, you know, like, he wants to be, he can't wait to, like, be fighting over money and growing old and fat together, and how that's for normal people and it's happening to him. Like, you know, like, I'm getting choked up over Terry. He's just, he deserves everything. Sweet. He's so sweet. Arlene, not so much.
Sam's like, Sam's like, you know, she's a little crazy, but so are you. And then he's like, oh, that might be mean. So is all of us. It's all fine. Yeah, it's really, really sweet. And then Sam gets the idea to make Jolie the handyman of his apartments, which is honestly a pretty good idea. You've got work to do. You've got a, like, underwear man over here who needs a reason to put on pants in the morning. It's just like a...
Yeah, ideally it would be great if Jolie wasn't the world's biggest pile of shit. But yeah, it's a good idea in theory.
Sam's mom is like, yeah, he'll do it. This is great. And then Jolie, like, tells Sam to have a good day, and it is the weirdest vibe. Like,
this it is not a good vibe.
Killer werewolves and killer vampires, and I still think that Jolie telling Sam to have a good day at work is the weirdest vibe in the whole
world. So sinister. Like, why is it so sinister?
It's horrible.
He could have said it with a giant, like, machete in his hand with the same effect.
Well, yeah, and we see what he does. This is, like, jumping in out of order in the notes, but in order for these characters, like, Jolie throws a fit today. Like, he calls the bar and is mean to Tommy over the phone, and Tommy, in a good move, is just like, no. And then Tommy wants to say it's Sam's, and Sam says yes and is like, I know something weird is going on in this family, and I would like to know what it is, and I will find out what it is. And Jolie barges in at Sam's and is acting like with a pretty outsized reaction for what is just a brotherly bonding sleepover, and you guys are all in the same parking lot. Like, yeah, it's fine.
And good on Sam for, like, fighting him off. But in the beginning there at Merlot's, when Sam was like, or when Tommy asked if he could stay over, and I just really feel like Sam shouldn't have questioned it at all. He was like, I need you to tell me what's going on. Tell me what's going on. Like, almost being like, if you don't tell me what's going on, I'm not letting you stay with me. And I just, like, I know that you want to know what's going on and you deserve to, because everything is really fucked up and they're being super shady. But you can't force that out of Tommy. And if Tommy wants to stay with you, oh my God, you need to let him. You need to let him at all times, because this is Tommy reaching out for a lifeline. Like, this is Tommy asking for help, and the only way he's ever going to ask for help. And Sam needs to just accept that with zero questions, because if you try to push him too much, you're going to push him away, and then he's going to be stuck in that shitty situation. Like, just, you know, you got to, at any time that someone who is clearly being abused is asking, like, hey, can we hang out? Like, do it. Do it. Every time. No questions. Do it.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Especially because Sam obviously cares about Tommy. Mm-hmm. Like, he's willing to physically intervene between Jolie and Tommy when things get bad. But it's like, maybe if you step between them earlier, things won't get like this. Obviously, that isn't really what happened, because Jolie, like, busted into his house. But I mean, still, when you hear, even if you hear somebody screaming on the phone.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah. 1000%. Like, that's just the kind of thing you need to take with no questions asked.
Yeah.
He's looking for a lifeline. Be the lifeline.
Yeah.
Even if it means you do nothing but sit around and have a beer and watch TV.
Yeah. And in more exciting sitting around news, Jesus is here.
Jesus.
To go on a date with Lafayette. And Lafayette is so surprised. And it is so cute. And he thinks his mother is dead. And Jesus is like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, no, no, I just like wanted to see if you wanted to go too.
So number one, this is so confident and bold of Jesus to do this in the first place. To come to this man's place of work and to ask him out on your day off, it is so impressive. Even more so to actually stay when you get a clear kind of brush off. To decide to stay for a 9-hour shift. Like, that is wild to me. Like, the confidence to do that, I would rather die, I think, than...
It's just 9 hours.
Yeah, I think I would rather die, but, like, good on him. Also, that boy is so cute.
Embarrassing. So cute. And it would just be so embarrassing for me personally, for, like, someone who I found attractive to see me, how I would entertain myself for 9 hours. That is...
Yeah.
For you.
He's, like, making friends with the locals and shit, like, playing pool and stuff. Like, that is a man that is into you. And not afraid to show that.
It's really cute. And it's so cute how Lafayette is like, oh, Lordy. And, like, even Jesus, like, makes, like, a little, like, hurrah, like, sound effect before they go in. He does, like, a little aside, like, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. Y'all saw the episode. And, yeah, that's adorable. And we love it.
Yeah. I can't wait to see how that works out. Hopefully well.
Jessica and Tommy are pretty cute work friends.
I love this. I am obsessed with this. Like, okay, and I know that, like, we are all huge Hoyt and Jessica shippers, but Tommy, like, why standing up for her, like, date? hyping her up and being like, that's a giant sixth grade boy. To be fair, he's not wrong. He is not wrong. And he's being super reassuring, just so, so sweet. I also really liked that moment that Tommy and Lafayette had. Tommy's a good boy, man. Save him. Save him from his shitty family.
Especially because, like, when Tommy has, like, a nice fitting t-shirt on, he's, like, obviously clean. I, like, loved how confident he seemed when he was talking to Jessica, because he's, like, so obviously shorter than her, and, like, we don't see him compared to Hoyt, but we know what it would be like. And for him to be like that's a big sixth grade boy, it's like chef's kiss. It's so good.
And he's, like, not carrying Tommy that, like, height difference with any sense of, like, inferiority complex or feeling some sort of, like, way emasculated or anything. Like, he is just – he's feeling it. He's having a good time.
And
I love
him. Like, he's flirting with her, too, because he's talking about how, like, you're, like, a – I don't remember exactly what she said.
Oh, he said you're like, a Jessica. Vampire hottie or something. He called it something like that. He was like, you're like,
I wrote it down. I found it. Okay. He says, he's talking about Hoyt and says, like, he's Little League. You're a smoking hot vampire. You're the majors.
Yeah. Yes. If a boy said that to me, it would be over. I am a simple woman.
Tommy. And Arlene is mean to Jessica about being a vampire, which is so rude.
I do love Jessica sticking it to her fucking racist ass.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Like, do not tip your waitress. Fuck you, Arlene.
Hypnotizes. Like, Jessica wouldn't have hypnotized anyone if Arlene wouldn't have said that. Yeah. And she used her hypnotism to make sure Arlene wasn't getting a tip from these people.
Yeah, good for her. Arlene has zero reason to treat Jessica like shit. She's just being an asshole, so fuck her.
Yeah. I think that's right. I think that's it. Oh, I do want to make sure that it is reiterated that if you, I guess maybe Hoyt didn't realize that Jessica was working at Merlot's, fine. But you walked in there and you saw her, you leave. You can't just take a date. Like, I understand that he can never not take a date to Merlot's, but this is a first date and that's your ex. Like, this is bad on two accounts.
Yeah.
Him and Jessica haven't really talked about their relationship, and this poor girl who seems so nice, even though I don't have anything in common with her, she just probably doesn't want to be at, like, the most awkward first date while you're giving, like, your hot ex-girlfriend, like, sexy vampire, like, eyeballs from across the room.
Yeah. And this feels, I mean, it feels like one of those things, I don't know, we talked about this before, where I think both of them need to grow up a lot before they can really be good for each other. And specifically, I think Hoyt in this situation really needs to grow up, because what he's doing is super immature and kind of mean. Even if he didn't go there intending for that to happen, like you said, once he saw that that's what was happening, you know, you can't. It feels like he's doing it on purpose because he saw Jessica talk to a boy. Yes. And that's some like 17-year-old shit. Like, you're fucking 28 or whatever, dude. You cannot be less mature than your 17-year-old vampire girlfriend.
Right. And that is that for real. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cliffhangers. Oh, about this cliffhanger.
Yes.
They use a version of the song Trouble. This version is by Jackie DeShannon. I did not go to the lengths to figure out what version I put on every mix CD I made through all of high school, but just know that this is one of my favorite songs. So, yeah. Sookie using her powers again. I mean, it's pretty exciting. It's really exciting because Russell loses it, and mm-hmm. it makes me want to go to the next episode. So I feel like it's in like the top half, but maybe like the bottom of the top half of cliffhangers.
You said in the bottom half?
The bottom top half? Of the top half.
Bottom of the top half. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Russell's like, the ending itself is like fine. I mean, we don't get to see Sookie use her powers very often, so it is very exciting for that reason. But also, like, Russell's outsized reaction to it just kind of makes the entire scene.
Yes. So, because it makes it seem like he might know something.
Or it's proving something. It's proving a theory he has.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it sparks a lot of intrigue and excitement.
Yeah.
Because if Russell can get this worked up about something, obviously it's something good to know.
How would you feel about the new 17?
I think that is perfect, because I was literally just going to be like, okay, so number 17 is.
Yeah. I think that's the perfect spot for it.
All right. Exciting. We've done it. No character intros, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a most chaotic you would like to share?
It is going to be Franklin being an absolute fucking deranged psychopath and then being like, look at how fast I can text motherfucker.
Yes.
Like, I feel he's the very definition
of like whiplash. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is also from the Jackson house, which is just Russell Edgington, just like how he lives, just him doing it. Like, the way he keeps Franklin around when he knows Franklin's insane. Like, the way he reacts to Sookie's powers.
He clearly delights in Franklin's derange.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's it for me. For most horny, I'm just excited because our, like, no qualms horny Jason seems like he's back, baby.
Yeah. That is, he's off chasing tail again. Maybe this means he'll stop chasing being a cop.
God, I hope so. Yeah. Maybe Crystal will say ACAB and that'll just put this whole thing to bed.
Yeah. We know that he's like willing to bend his own beliefs and his own like way of life for women. But most horny for me is going to be Talbot from the second that Eric Northman walked his foine ass into that house. Talbot and the rest of us. Good night.
Yeah, I think that's right. nothing for books from me today. Here's the analogy that has been going on in my head recently, which is that like the Sookie Stackhouse novels are like a coat rack, like a very skinny coat rack with lots of arms to hang coats on, but there's nothing there. And then True Blood, the TV show, is like 10 years worth of a full family's amount of coats.
So fucking walk-in closet.
Yeah. So it's like I've read through like a certain point in the plot, and it's like we have 6 episodes left of this is episode 5, so we have 7 episodes left of this season. And I'm like 60% of the way through the book. And so I'm like, what could possibly
I do think this is the point in the books where like they just really the show really just starts to diverge from everything in the books. And then like I think from here on, we're only going to get like a few like almost just Easter eggs of like little plot points from the books.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because I know that, you know, most people who watch True Blood the first time, there's sort of some like storylines and just some things where it was just like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Like, that's part of the joy of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder, if any of that is from the books, or if there's any like good book plots that we'll find that we'll be like, why wouldn't you just adapt that? We'll see.
I want to say that some of the witch stuff is in the books, but I honestly don't remember. We'll see.
It's exciting. Yeah. Yeah, I think that is it for episode content. If you'd like to find me elsewhere on the internet, I am at Mellow Yellow at Blue Sky and Letterboxd, and I make another podcast about pop culture called Wild Pretty Things, and that is on Patreon.
And you can find me on Instagram at Ragey Cakes. You can find my sometimes posting YA podcast at Acty Age on Instagram, etc. I think that's it.
Yeah. So thank you very much to DJ Empirical for our theme song. You can find the pod on Instagram and Blue Sky at Fang Bangers Pod with a Z, and email us your chaotic, horny thoughts on True Blood, please, to fangbangerspod@gmail.com. That's also with a Z.
I'm Tasia. My blood type is Sophie Ann's overstated perfume.
I'm Melissa, and my blood type is a ridiculous remnant of the Middle Ages.
Excellent.
We did it.
Bye.
Bye.